Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
The man known to history as King Henry VI was born on the 6th of December 1421 during the time of the Hundred Years' War. His mother, Catherine of Valois, was born in Paris on the 27th of October 1401 to King Charles VI of France and Isabeau of Bavaria. She was their youngest daughter and sister of Charles VII. She would marry Henry VI's father, King Henry V, at 18 years old on the 2nd of June 1420, but little of her early years are known as a younger princess. Henry V was crowned king on the 9th of April 1413, but at the time of his birth on the 16th of September 1386, he was not in the direct line of succession. In 1399, his father, Henry Bolingbroke, cousin of King Richard II, seized the throne, becoming Henry IV, the first Lancastrian king. As a result, Henry V came to be in the line of succession and was given the title Prince of Wales. His military career began at an early age and would continue throughout his life, culminating in the invasion of France in 1415 and the Battle of Agincourt, which broke the truce negotiated by Richard II to press his claim to the French throne through his descent from Edward III and reignited the Hundred Years' War. This French campaign would conclude in 1420 with the Treaty of Troyes, in which King Charles VI acknowledged Henry as heir to the French throne. Henry's war in France would continue, now allied with the Burgundians against the Armagnacs. He returned to England early in 1421, where he progressed around the country and would be joined in March by Catherine following her coronation. After receiving news of his brother Thomas's death in March at Beaugay, Henry returned to France in June 1421. Several battles followed, including that which was to be his last at the Siege of Meaux. He would die from dysentery 3 months following the conclusion of the siege at the Castle of Vincennes on the 31st of August 1422, having never met his son. As the only son of Henry V, the 9-month-old Henry became King Henry VI upon his father's death. However, as an infant, clearly there was no way that Henry could rule. Close to death, Henry V had made provisions in his will for the protection and upbringing of his son. Humphrey, Duke of Gloucester, Henry's youngest brother, who had earlier in 1422 been designated as Keeper of the Realm, was accorded with the protection and defence of the young prince. But governorship of the boy was to go to the Duke of Exeter, Thomas Beaufort, while the Regency of France would pass to John, Duke of Bedford, Henry's eldest younger brother, until such time as the young Henry was old enough to rule. However, there would be bad feeling over some of the provisions in the will, namely that Humphrey was not seen as a good choice for Regent of England. Instead, despite his arguments for himself, which continued throughout his life, he was appointed by Parliament to defend the realm and hold the position of chief counsellor to the king, but without the powers of a regent. As the youngest of the two surviving brothers, these powers would be given up to John whenever he was present in England. A council would be formed until such time as the king came into his majority. Among those who would sit on this council was Henry Beaufort, Bishop of Winchester. Shortly after the death of his father, Charles VI of France died, and by virtue of the Treaty of Troyes, Henry now succeeded to the throne of France at still less than a year old. However, this was not accepted throughout the whole of France, as Dauphin Charles's claim to the throne was acknowledged by the Armagnacs, who still held sway in central and southern France. The Dauphin although disinherited by the Treaty of Troyes, was proclaimed Charles VII on the 30th of October, 1422. As was usual, Catherine, although involved in her son's upbringing and choice of servants, was not his principal carer. He was placed under the control of Elizabeth Ryman and cared for by a small team of nurses before being given over to the care of a new governess, Lady Alice Butler. She was to begin his teaching in courtesy, discipline, and other appropriate matters, and was given provision to provide reasonable chastisement without reprisals to the young king when necessary. Henry would make his first appearance in public life shortly before his second birthday at the opening of Parliament. This long-held tradition of the monarch being present for the opening of Parliament is still upheld today, although in a somewhat modernized form. In June 1428, Richard Beauchamp, the Earl of Warwick, was appointed as Henry's guardian to continue his education in matters of kingship, piety, and martial arts. Records remain of two little coat armors made for him at 7 years old, and that he was given a long-bladed sword for to learn the king to play in his tender age. But such was the efficacy of his education by Lady Alice already at this time that in March 1428, his ruling council estimated that he would be able to take a more active hand in governance in just a few years. However, this statement also alludes to the friction within the council caused by Gloucester's continual seeking of power and offered a form of resistance to him. During this first decade of Henry's life, the war in France against the Armagnacs continued under his uncle, John, Duke of Bedford. In August 1424, Bedford and his English and Norman forces assembled on the Verneuil Plain in Normandy, heavily outnumbered by the combined force of the French and Scots, who were allied to the Armagnacs at this time. The initial assault by the Lombard cavalry broke through the English lines, but after a hard-fought battle, Bedford's forces prevailed, marking the high point of the English campaign. It is estimated that almost half of the assembled French force died on the field that day. The battles continued to push back the Armagnacs, and in late 1428, the Siege of Orléans began. However, their earlier success would not be repeated. Thomas Montacute, Earl of Salisbury, who'd been present by Bedford's side in France for many years, was killed early on during the siege, and despite being replaced by a competent commander, the English couldn't storm the heavily fortified city. The appearance of Joan of Arc first in the court of Charles VII in February 1429, and then at Orléans in April, would signal their upcoming defeat. Joan and her retinue entered the town easily despite the English blockade, and after only 4 days of fighting, the English lifted the siege and retreated on the 8th of May. Further battles would follow where Joan was present, with many English supporting towns capitulating in the face of her advancing force, including Rheims in July. Rheims had long been considered a holy site, as it was in the cathedral of this city where the kings were consecrated with the holy oil. And so, with its capitulation, Charles entered Rheims on the 16th of July. His coronation and anointing took place the next day, on the 17th of July, 1429. Henry's counselors realized that a strong response was necessary following the coronation of Charles and the defeats at the hands of Joan of Arc. It was decided that Henry, despite his age, should be crowned, and so preparations began. His coronation would take place on the 6th of November 1429 at Westminster, but this on its own would not be enough, and so on the 23rd of April 1430, Henry set out for France alongside the Earl of Warwick, accompanied by a retinue of over 300 and an army at his back. Henry stayed first in Calais until the route to Rouen had been secured before setting out, and arrived in the city at the end of July. It is noted that upon his arrival in Rouen, he was greeted by a cheering crowd, and the noise was such that Henry asked that it be stopped, perhaps giving an indication of a sensitive nature. He was to remain there until such time as it was safe to make the journey to Paris, and to this end would be in Rouen for over a year. Early into his stay in France, Joan of Arc was captured in May 1430 by the Burgundians at the Siege of Compiègne. She would later be sold to the English, tried for heresy, and burnt at the stake in Rouen in May 1431. Although Henry was in Rouen at the same time as the trial took place, it is unclear whether he was present for any of the proceedings. It was at some point around this time that Henry VI's mother, Catherine, married her second husband, the Welsh Owen Tudor, in secret. Their first child, Edmund, would be born shortly after they were married. They would have two more sons, Jasper and Owen, and a daughter of whom little is known. Owen, as a Welshman, was granted letters of denizenship by Parliament in 1432, but the marriage was kept out of the public sphere. Henry finally arrived in Paris in December of 1431. His coronation took place on the 16th of December, but by all accounts, it was a hurried affair. The ceremony was performed by the now Cardinal Beaufort rather than a French bishop, and the feast that followed the ceremony was said to be disappointing. However, it is likely that the coronation was somewhat overshadowed, as just 3 days before, Philip, Duke of Burgundy, had concluded a truce with Charles VII that would last for the next 6 years. Henry left France on the 29th of January 1432 and would never return. During the years 1432 to 1436, the king was still in his minority. However, Henry was clearly starting to realize his position, and in 1432, Warwick requested more power within his guardianship of the boy to protect himself from defiance on the part of Henry and any possible punishment amounting from his chastisements. At the same time, he also requested that those men of questionable virtues be kept apart from Henry to keep from influencing the impressionable young king. There was still friction among the council at this time, much of it involving Gloucester and Cardinal Beaufort, which was moderated in some part by Bedford. Their differences had been clear throughout their time serving together, but now it was their views on the continuing war in France that would come to the fore. Gloucester's views differed greatly from Beaufort's. There had been talk of making peace with the Armagnacs off and on for some years, but it wasn't until late 1435 that serious efforts to this end were made with the Congress of Arras in August and September 1435. The Congress, led by Beaufort, would not bring about peace, and just a week after it ended, Bedford died on the 14th of September. Another week after that, on the 21st of September, a treaty between the Burgundians and French was sealed, declaring the Burgundians' defection from the side of the English. The capture of Paris followed in April 1436. Henry attended his first council meeting in October 1435 in response to the failure of Arras and began taking an active role in government, although still guided by his councillors. But the roles played by Beaufort and Gloucester in trying to secure their influence over Henry, more so since Bedford's death, would serve to mould the king into someone who depended on others to tell him what to do, rather than allowing him to become a man confident in his own decision. Another prominent influence in his life, Warwick, his guardian of almost 8 years, resigned the position in May 1436 with no replacement. By the end of July 1436, Henry signed his first warrant, a grant to Beaufort just days after Gloucester left for Calais. Henry continued through 1436 and 1437 to issue warrants, still alongside his council, rewarding and patronizing many of those that had been among his household through the years, with new roles within government and prominent positions in the kingdom. This included William de la Pole, the Earl of Suffolk, who had been steward of the household since 1433. Suffolk was appointed as chief steward of the Duchy of Lancaster, and like Beaufort and Gloucester, would become a major influence in Henry's reign. In 1437, the council tentatively began to consult the king on matters of appointment where it was said he deferred to their advice. In mid-1437, Henry asserted his piety in siding with Pope Eugenius IV against the Council of Bâle. He also shared Beaufort's views that making peace in France would be preferable to continuing the conflict, giving Beaufort the opportunity to further exert his influence over the king. On the 12th of November 1437, a great council was convened and Henry announced his intention to step fully into his role as king whilst keeping his council. But 1437 not only marked Henry's step into ruling, his mother, Catherine, had fallen ill in 1436 and moved to Bermondsey Abbey later that year, where she was tended to, but she would die on the 3rd of January. Her two eldest sons and half-brothers to Henry would be placed in the care of Suffolk's sister, Catherine de la Pole, abbess of Barking Abbey, possibly at the suggestion of Suffolk to the king, whilst Owen Tudor would be imprisoned for 2 years. During Henry's minority, the kingdom's finances were already under strain from the continuing war in France, and frequently expenditure outstripped the income. On top of this, the crown inherited debt not only from Henry V, but also from Henry IV. On many occasions, the crown found itself in need of aid, and so they borrowed extensively. Cardinal Beaufort was one of their principal lenders. A vastly wealthy man, he had already been lending to the crown under Henry V. Now, stepping into his reign, Henry's generosity to his expanding household in granting many patronages would further undermine attempts to balance the books. Early signs of the poor attention he gave to matters of rule, and perhaps something of a lack of understanding of resources, can be seen when he willingly signed a number of petitions which directly impoverished the crown and weakened the local governing of parts of the realm. These grants continued throughout his reign, and coupled with military expenditure and a worsening economy, would continue to adversely affect the finances of the realm. Despite attempts by the council to curb Henry's generosity, the worsening financial situation would contribute, in time, to rebellion. Although very willing to hand out grants of office, Henry lacked knowledge on the finer diplomatic points of his actions and realm. In 1441, among the many grants he handed out was the stewardship of the Duchy of Cornwall to the Earl of Devon, who'd made a petition to the king. Lord Bonville had been appointed royal steward in Cornwall for life in 1437, of which the Duchy of Cornwall fell within the bounds. The two men were already feuding at the time. Shortly after this appointment, Henry was forced to write to Devon and ask that he not take up the office until further discussions had taken place in the council, a request which Devon refused. Following violence between the parties, later in the year, both men would give up the stewardships, and although the exact outcome of an arbitration in the following year is unknown, Devon still regarded himself as the rightful steward. This situation was not uncommon, and it has been suggested that in some cases Henry was uncertain whether the grants he made could be implemented, as many of them carried a caveat that they should only take effect if an identical patent had not already been issued. In a number of cases, duplicated grants that were contested by the newer party or those that were overgenerous would have to be formally cancelled by members of the government. Throughout the 1440s, Henry also frequently interfered with justice. The court process during this period was complicated, and it was a difficult and long process for many to attain justice. Many cases would be referred to the King's Council, where the lower courts could not or would not make a judgment. Throughout this period, Henry issued many pardons for wide-ranging crimes, including attempted rape and murder, further undermining the struggling justice system. The immediate years following his minority were spent in the pursuit of peace with France, despite ongoing military campaigns, of which Henry showed little in the way of decisive leadership. Indeed, it was noted that his interference in matters concerning France often proved a hindrance. Abortive attempts were made in 1438, before the Congress of Oi began in the summer of 1439, but would conclude only with a truce with the Burgundians. However, there was still the possibility of further discussions as the talks had not been formally terminated. And so, in 1440, Henry revisited the option of releasing the Duke of Orléans, who had been a prisoner in England since the Battle of Agincourt. Gloucester was staunchly against this idea. But with his militaristic attitude, his influence was waning, and it was the arguments of Beaufort and Archbishop Kemp, alongside advice from Suffolk, that swayed the king. It has been said that ultimately Henry's decision to free Orléans lacked substance and was driven by his deep convictions for want of peace, given his lack of interest in military matters. Nevertheless, the first part of Orléans' ransom was raised by the French, and he was released later that year at the beginning of November, but would quickly fail in his mission to broker a peace. It appears that Henry's mind was in part elsewhere during the negotiations when, in September of 1440 and February of 1441, he founded Eton College and King's College, Cambridge, and involved himself in the supervision of their building. Eton was dedicated to the Virgin Mary, and these acts of founding acted as much in the king's interest of education as it did his piety. Such was his interest in education, more than that of any other king, that there are records of Henry donating many of his own books to All Souls College in Oxford and King's Hall, Cambridge. In this promotion of education, he felt akin to Alfred the Great, and such was his admiration for Alfred that he dedicated much time and effort in 1442 to having him canonized, although his efforts would ultimately fail. It was in 1441 that Gloucester's influence over the king would finally come to an end when his second wife, Eleanor Cobham, with ambitions to be queen, sought the advice of astrologers and necromancers who predicted that Henry would succumb to sickness in the summer of 1441. Rumours of this soon circulated, and in July, she was arrested. She was forcibly divorced from Gloucester and imprisoned for the rest of her life. Gloucester's reputation would never recover. In 1443, after the failure of peace talks and further French victories, the decision was made to send another expedition to France. Both Normandy and the long-held Duchy of Gascony needed relief, but the treasury could not support two expeditions, and so eventually Gascony was selected, the force to be led by the first Duke of Somerset, John Beaufort. It has been suggested that the decision to undertake the campaign was down to Cardinal Beaufort. Indeed, Somerset was his nephew, but the campaign would end in failure. Somerset would die soon after his return to England, and Beaufort would retire from active duties as councillor, although he would still continue to exert some influence and offer informal counsel. Without the influences of Gloucester and Beaufort, Suffolk now moved to the fore. Given the perilous financial situation within England, drained further by the ongoing war, a peace was needed. And so, at the insistence of Henry, but not without some reluctance, Suffolk travelled to France in early 1444 to negotiate a marriage with Margaret of Anjou, the niece of Charles VII. Before departing, however, Suffolk made sure to protect himself and asked for a public declaration that neither he nor his colleagues would be held responsible should they fail, which Henry duly granted. The negotiations concluded on the 22nd of May, resulting in the betrothal of Margaret to Henry on the 24th and the sealing of a two-year truce on the 28th. Suffolk acted as proxy during the betrothal ceremony and on his return to England was richly rewarded, first with the wardship of Margaret Beaufort, the deceased Somerset's daughter, and later in the year was raised to the rank of Marquess. Suffolk would return to France at the end of 1444 to continue the negotiations and early in 1445 once again acted as proxy for Henry in his wedding to Margaret at Nancy. Margaret arrived in England in April where, after recovering from a period of illness that had begun in France, made worse by the sea crossing, she journeyed to Titchfield Abbey and was married to Henry on the 22nd of April 1445, Margaret would stay at one of Cardinal Beaufort's manors for a short time before making her way to London, where she arrived on the 28th of May and was crowned 2 days later. Rumours abounded, however, that during the negotiations, Suffolk had been instructed by the king to cede land to the French, and although he would report to Parliament that this was not the case, his reputation suffered. Suffolk kept his position, and over the ensuing years would increase his influence at court when many of his own men were appointed to prominent positions within the council. The marriage seems to have been a happy one, and the king was generous with his wife, buying her jewels and horses, and in 1448 he allowed her to found Queen's College, Cambridge. They spent much time together in the royal palaces, but despite this, it would be 8 years before a child was born of their union. Why it took the couple so long to produce an heir is unknown, but Henry was said to be of a prudish nature. Accounts survive of a visit to Bath in 1449, where he was said to be shocked and embarrassed to see men and women bathing naked together. Another similar event occurred at a Christmas pageant, which featured women with bared breasts, to which the king is said to have stormed out at the sight. Following his wedding, Henry actively sought peace with Charles VII. Both rulers were said to be enthusiastic about making an agreement, but only extensions to the truce were concluded. When the first of the French envoys arrived in London in 1445, Henry is noted to have greeted them personally, showing almost excessive friendliness towards them. Although much of the negotiations took place between envoys, Henry did assert that he was happy to travel to France to speak in person to Charles. However, this meeting would never come to pass. Throughout the war, whenever peace was on the table, the English had been unwilling to cede land, but this was about to change. In December 1445, Henry wrote to Charles that he was willing to cede Maine to the French in the pursuit of peace between them. This act by Henry was in response to envoys from Charles and the Duke René, Margaret's father, and in return would enact a 20-year truce. Henry, acting on his own initiative, personally authorized the document, although in some part he was said to have been influenced by his wife in coming to this decision. The move by Henry was deeply unpopular and resisted by the English commanders in France. The original date for the session was to be the 30th of April 1446, but this day came and went without the land being handed over. Opposition to the current French policy in England was led, predictably, by Gloucester, who had always maintained a stance of not ceding any territory. A parliament, originally scheduled to take place in Cambridge, was rearranged to meet in Bury St Edmunds, a stronghold of Suffolk's influence, and Gloucester was summoned to attend. Rumours that Gloucester was plotting against Henry had seemingly been spread, and the king apparently believed them. For on Gloucester's arrival on the 18th of February 1447, he was denied access to the king and told to go instead to his lodgings. Gloucester was arrested later that day on a dubious charge of treason, but would not face trial until 5 days later, and on the 23rd of February, he was found dead. There has been some suggestion that Suffolk, along with others, persuaded the king of his uncle's intentions to raise the Welsh against him, as Gloucester had holdings there. But it is likely that Suffolk's true intent was to silence opposition to the French policy that he was now pursuing, albeit without the intention of the Duke's death. In order to prevent rumours of foul play, his body was displayed in church. In the following months, a number of those arrested alongside him were tried and sentenced to death by hanging, drawing, and quartering. But in a show of mercy and compassion, Henry pardoned them as the executions were taking place, and even allowed the return of their confiscated possessions and estates. But in years to come, the myth, the good Duke Humphrey, would cause many to believe that those in the king's service had conspired to bring about his death, damaging the standing of the king. There would be another prominent death for Henry in the same year, when the 72-year-old Cardinal Beaufort died on the 11th of April 1447. Both Henry and his queen were remembered in Beaufort's will and were bequeathed a number of items, as well as provision for substantial donations to Eton and King's College. But there was still opposition from his commanders in France. Henry authorized his new king's commissioners to use force, if necessary, to take custody of the holdings in Maine in preparation for the cession in his fervent pursuit of peace. Finally, after much back and forth and dragging of heels by those appointed by Henry to facilitate the cession, Maine was given over in March 1448, but not without a show of force by Charles, who briefly laid siege to Le Mans. Ultimately, the extended truce granted by the cession would be short-lived, and in the ensuing years, Henry would lose control of both Normandy and Gascony following an attack on the Breton town of Fougères by the English in March 1449. This attack was launched on the pretext of freeing the pro-English Gilles, brother to the Duke of Brittany and a great childhood friend of Henry, and was orchestrated by Suffolk and the second Duke of Somerset, Edmund Beaufort. The attack led to a French declaration of war in July. Other monarchs, such as Henry's own father, would have seized on the opportunity to lead a force to recapture the territory lost to the French, but this was not the case for Henry, and there is no suggestion of such an idea ever having been raised at the time. The Hundred Years' War would come to an end with the French victory in 1453. Henry's mismanagement of funds over the years and his fiscal prioritization of domestic projects and patronages rather than the war effort and lack of military leadership can in part be blamed for the English defeat. It was during this tumultuous time that the downfall of Suffolk and other prominent members of the council came about. In the years leading up to 1450, Suffolk's influence in court was prominent as fewer councillors attended meetings, and it has been suggested that he was attempting to strengthen his line by betrothing his eldest son to Margaret Beaufort. Owing to the situation in France and the loss of Rouen in October, Parliament was called late in 1449, and soon they were seeking a scapegoat for this disastrous turn of events. Dissatisfaction with the handling of France and anger over the loss of long-held territories was rife throughout the country. The first victim of the dissatisfaction was the Keeper of the Privy Seal, Bishop Adam Molins, one of Suffolk's most fervent supporters, who was murdered in Portsmouth on the 9th of January 1450 by a soldier set to embark for France to go to the aid of Normandy. When Parliament reconvened after Christmas, late in January of 1450, Suffolk declared his loyalty to the crown, but 4 days later, the House of Commons petitioned for his arrest. He was impeached on the 7th of February with many spurious charges, including treason, laid against him. On the 9th of March, Suffolk denied all charges before the King and Parliament. Finding himself to be in a difficult position, Henry would deal with the matter himself. And on the 17th of March, the Lords of Parliament and Suffolk gathered in his personal chamber. Suffolk once again protested his innocence and Henry dismissed the charge of treason, but found him guilty of lesser charges and sentenced him to banishment for 5 years, in an effort to protect him. Suffolk was removed from London during the night of the 19th of March, but despite the secrecy, was hounded part of the way to his estate in Suffolk by a group of Londoners. 2 days later, there was rioting in London. Due to start his banishment on the 1st of May, he took ship from Ipswich, heading for Calais, where he would continue his journey to the Duke of Burgundy's lands in the Low Countries, but his ships were intercepted in the Straits of Dover. He was taken aboard a ship called the Nicholas of the Tower, where he was held for a short while before being beheaded on the 2nd of May 1450. His body lay on a Dover beach, and it was said that his head was placed on a pole next to it. Given the unrest, when Parliament resumed on the 29th of April after the Easter break, it was held in Leicester, and the King would be in attendance. The issue of resumption had been put forward in previous sessions of Parliament, but initially Henry resisted any major implementation and insisted that his previous grants should stand so that his credibility would not suffer further. Now, in this latest session, the issue was raised again by the Commons. In an effort to take back a portion of lost revenue, a bill was put forward that would revert hereditary grants to life grants, thus returning land to the Crown upon death. This bill pertained to all grants made by Henry since the start of his reign, but with some exemptions, as patronage had always been a part of a king's rule. It wasn't until the 6th of May, when news of Suffolk's death reached them, that the king accepted the bill. But in the coming month, nearly 200 exemptions would be attached to it, thus defeating its purpose. The issue of resumption would be raised again in the next year's session of Parliament, 1450-51, given the failings of the first. Fewer exemptions would be made, but this time Eton and King's College were not entirely exempt as their grants were heavily burdening the Crown. Also, within this bill, Parliament tried to curtail the King in his future patronages by proposing that all future grants were to be examined by the three principal officers of state and a minimum of six councillors who would have the power to authorise them. However, Henry refused to give his consent to this part of the Act, as he did not want his own initiatives restricted. Further exemptions were added to the bill before it was eventually passed by the King and proved to be somewhat more effective than the first bill in the return of revenue to the Crown. It was the very issue that resumption was trying to solve that led in part to the disaffection within the realm. Losses in France, the financial situation and ill feeling towards those among Henry's councillors whom it was thought used their positions to benefit themselves, all added to growing tensions. Criticism had not been levelled at Henry, but the deaths of two of his closest advisers and feelings towards others highlighted just how little control he had. This disaffection was felt heavily in Kent, where a combination of French raids on the coast, slow recompense for the soldiers passing through the county to and from France, and the rumour that Kent was to be punished for Suffolk's death all added up to the beginning of a rebellion in late May of 1450 led by Jack Cade, also known as John Cade. Cade would also go under the alias John Mortimer, perhaps in an attempt to link himself to the Duke of York. News of the rebellion reached Parliament in Leicester on the 6th of June, and shortly after Henry returned to London, but not before arrangements were made for two separate commissions of lords to quash the uprising. Before the forces could be raised, however, the rebels journeyed to Blackheath, arriving on the 11th of June, where they made camp. Initially, the plan was to suppress them, and Henry announced that he would accompany those charged with this duty to confront the rebels, but was soon persuaded by his councillors to change his mind after an assessment of their strength was made. Despite swearing loyalty, part of their demands was to see the removal of certain powerful men that surrounded the king. They were instead offered a pardon to return to their lands and so dismissed negotiations. When Henry changed his mind again and decided to go heavily armed to Blackheath, they found on their arrival on the 18th of June that the rebels had withdrawn back to Kent. A small force of around 400 was sent in pursuit, but were ambushed and many were killed near Tunbridge. Those who survived fled. They were in turn pursued by a larger force who pushed through Kent indiscriminately, which only served to bolster the resolve of the rebels. Meanwhile, a growing number of those loyal to the Crown threatened to defect unless certain high-ranking members within the King's circle, who they considered traitors, were arrested. Henry capitulated to their demands and ordered the arrest of Lord Say on the 19th of June. Say was a long-serving member of the council and had been one of Suffolk's supporters. The next day, Henry would publicly encourage the arrest of others who were considered traitors. Henry returned to Westminster and secretly summoned Lord Say from the Tower, likely an effort to offer his protection as he had done with Suffolk, but this order was refused by the constable. As the situation deteriorated and men defected to Cade, discussions were held in which Henry was persuaded to withdraw from London, and so, on the 25th of June, he left and made his way to Kenilworth Castle. Henry called for forces to be bolstered at Kenilworth for his protection, but made no effort to send troops to London. 69 years earlier, in 1381, Richard II had confronted the leaders of the peasants' revolt. Now it seemed that Henry's mind had changed again and had no further intention to do so, choosing to flee instead. The defence of London was now in the hands of the mayor and common council. With news of the king's departure, the rebels turned back to London and encamped in Southwark, just to the south of London Bridge, but initially were unable to enter London itself. The king's abandonment of the city had a demoralizing effect on those left to defend it, and when another rising occurred in Essex, rebel numbers were soon bolstered. Cade would cross the bridge on the 3rd of July and, despite previous pronouncements of keeping the king's peace, demonstrated by the beheading of one of his offending officers, he would involve himself in acts of criminality. As a conciliatory act to quell the disaffection, Henry, on the 1st of July, nominated a commission of oyer and terminer to deal with those named as traitors. Cade was present for these sessions at the Guildhall. Many of those brought into the sessions were condemned, including Lord Say, who was brought from the Tower and denied the right to be tried by his peers, and William Cromer, Sheriff of Kent and Say's son-in-law. Say and Cromer were condemned and executed, and alongside many others, their heads were placed on spikes and paraded through the city. Say's lifeless body was dragged through the streets as they made their way to Southwark, attached to Cade's saddle. But it seems the Londoners had had enough, and on the night of the 5th of July, they fought the rebels and prevented them from crossing the bridge back into the city, eventually being able to close the gate, barring them from entering. The victory had been costly, and many citizens lay dead after the fight. Negotiations quickly followed, with the Queen offering a pardon to Cade. Following further negotiations and the receiving of petitions from the rebels, they were given charters of pardon. Many within the rebel force took up the offer of the pardon, but Cade shunned it and crossed back into Kent. He was proclaimed a traitor on the 10th of July, with a bounty of 1,000 marks placed on him, and the spoils he had taken were seized and sold off to raise funds. He was captured in Heathfield, Sussex, on the 12th of July, and died of wounds sustained in his apprehension. His naked body was brought back to Southwark and beheaded, and his head displayed on London Bridge. His body was drawn through the city before being quartered. Henry returned to London towards the end of July. Unrest continued in the southeast, and so another commission of oyer and terminer was appointed to investigate those in connection with the complainants from Kent. Many royal officials and Kent landowners were brought before the justices, but their punishments, for those who were found guilty, were light. Similarly, those who continued with the rebellion, having shunned the pardon, were sought to make a show that treason would not be tolerated, but despite this, the trouble and dissension with royal officials continued well into 1451, spilling over into other areas across the country. Amidst the turmoil in 1450, Richard, Duke of York, the king's cousin, returned from Ireland, where he'd been lieutenant since December 1447, a post he'd previously held in France after Bedford's death. Unduly disturbed by the references to York throughout the rebellion, orders were issued by Henry's usher of the chambers to delay York's landing, and so when he attempted to land at Beaumaris in Anglesey, was denied, and would instead land further down the Welsh coast. When he eventually reached London on the 27th of September, he met with Henry briefly, and would stay in the city for 2 weeks. During this time, they communicated through a series of bills in which York rebuffed those he had been associated with during the rebellion and offered to take a leading hand in government to quell the disquiet. Henry acknowledged York as his loyal subject and beloved cousin, but instead of accepting his proposal, instead stated that a new council was to be established, which York was to be a part of. After only 2 weeks, York left London to tour his estates in the Midlands before Parliament opened in November. On the 3rd of December of 1450, in order to quell the unrest that was rife in London, Henry and a great number of the lords rode out through the city. It seemed that this parade had the desired effect and tempers cooled. York was dispatched to punish the rebels still in Kent and Sussex later that month. Later in 1451, during the same session of Parliament, Henry refused the attainder against the deceased Suffolk proposed by the Commons and would appoint York's rival Somerset as captain of Calais. In what was to be the final session of Parliament, the issue of succession was raised by Thomas Young, an ally of York. As the king had so far failed to produce an heir, and with Bedford and Gloucester dead, there was no clear successor to Henry. Both Somerset and York had claims, but Thomas put it to Parliament that York should be acknowledged as heir presumptive, and the Commons refused to continue with any other business until York had been named. Henry was stirred to action and had Thomas arrested and sent to the Tower and immediately dissolved Parliament. York was dealt a further blow in 1452 when the Speaker of the previous Parliament session and one of York's allies, William Oldhall, was forcibly removed by order of Somerset from sanctuary at St. Martin the Grand Church. He was charged with looting possessions from Somerset's property during the trouble in 1450, but also with the spurious charge of plotting against the king on York's behalf. This only served to inflame the feud that already existed between York and Somerset, who was, by now, a leading member of the government and firmly in Henry's favour. York gathered a host and marched to Dartford intent on removing Somerset, who, for his part, gathered a great number of the lords and the king himself, and went out to meet York, making camp at Blackheath. Negotiations were held at the beginning of March, and York laid out his grievances, most of which were against Somerset, but failed to gain the support of the king and lordly retinue. York was returned to London and 2 weeks later made to swear a humiliating oath of allegiance to the crown in St. Paul's Cathedral. Following this, Somerset's influence grew in Parliament, whereas York would lose the Lieutenancy of Ireland to a man who he had once considered an ally, but who now moved towards Somerset's sphere of influence. The remainder of 1452 was spent in the continued effort of putting an end to those rebels still at large in Kent, to which end many were executed and their heads displayed on London Bridge, although Henry would issue another general pardon to all those but the murderers of the bishops Molins and Ayscough. He would also embark on a judicial tour of lands held by York, making himself visible to the populace, and took a hand in dispensing justice to those involved in the attempted uprising as one of the commissioners of Oyer and Terminer. Henry accepted many petitions during this time, but some, at the direction of Somerset, were forced to submit to the king, while others were hanged. In October, they would see some success in France when Bordeaux was retaken, having been captured by the French the year before. But although there had been some discussion of Henry joining the campaign earlier in the year, this, once again, didn't happen. In November, Henry raised Edmund and Jasper Tudor to the earldoms of Richmond and Pembroke, positions that had once been held by his uncles Bedford and Gloucester, and in early 1453, Parliament accepted a petition to formally acknowledge the boys as the king's half-brothers. The wardship of Margaret Beaufort was given to the brothers, and Edmund would marry her in November 1455. At 13 years old, she would give birth to her only son, Henry Tudor, on the 28th of January 1457. More good news graced the court in 1453 when it was announced that Queen Margaret was pregnant with a long-awaited heir. Henry was generous in granting a reward to the messenger that brought him the news. But the modest recovery of Henry's rule was short-lived when the news came of a terrible defeat in France in July. Just a short while later, in early August 1453, Henry collapsed into a catatonic state while at the Royal Hunting Lodge in Clarendon. Henry's precise illness has not been identified, but it has been termed as a severe mental collapse, which left him completely incapacitated and in no way able to rule, even in appearance. It was said that he recognized no one, could not speak, nor clean or feed himself. His grandfather, Charles VI of France, had suffered bouts of madness during his life, where he would become violent, among other symptoms. But there is no suggestion that Henry suffered in this way. Initially, Henry's sickness was kept secret, but this state could not continue when he failed to recover after some weeks. Finally, after the birth of Henry's only child, Edward, on the 13th of October 1453, a great council was summoned, and among the high lords, the Duke of York was invited to attend. Although he was encouraged to put aside his differences with Somerset in attendance at the council, York seized his chance to bring about his downfall. When the Duke of Norfolk launched a verbal attack accusing Somerset of treason for losses in France and demanding his imprisonment at York's request, the lords consented, capitulating to the aggressiveness of the attack. York now stepped to the fore, but would be challenged by Queen Margaret, who, in January 1454, put forth her claim to the regency. However, this was rejected outright by both Houses of Parliament before they made a concession and named Edward as Prince of Wales on the 15th of March. On the 27th of March, York was named as Protector of the Realm and Chief Counsellor. During his term as Protector, York would appoint himself Captain of Calais, reclaim his lieutenancy of Ireland, and appoint some of his own allies to the council, including Richard Neville, Earl of Salisbury, as Chancellor. Henry finally recovered by Christmas 1454, although he had no memory of his period of illness, and straight away ordered gifts of thanks to be delivered to the shrine in Canterbury for his recovery. Henry acknowledged his son, ensuring the succession, and would quickly undo much of what York had enacted as Protector. Somerset was released from the Tower and soon resumed his position within government, reclaiming the titles of Captain of Calais and Constable of England from York. The Duke of Exeter, imprisoned by York for his part in the violent feud between the Percys and Nevilles, was ordered to be released, and Salisbury was removed as Chancellor. The Protectorate was formally ended, and with York and his allies sidelined and fearing victimization, they left London and began raising an army. The initial intention by York and his allies was not to go to war, only to remove the traitors from around the king, namely Somerset and his allies. News of the approaching force prompted Henry to send a small delegation to negotiate with York, but to no avail. Henry and the court had been due to travel to Leicester for a great council on the 21st of May, but now it was decided to divert to St. Albans to gather reinforcements before proceeding to Leicester. They were still a short distance from St. Albans on the morning of the 22nd of May when news arrived that York was not far away with a larger force than their own. With this news, Henry appointed Humphrey, Duke of Buckingham, as Constable of England, a conciliatory action, in the hope that York would be willing to negotiate with someone other than Somerset. The King's party continued on, but York reached St. Albans first. Negotiations began in the King's name by Buckingham and Somerset, but it seems that Henry took no part in them. In stark contrast to the way he threw himself into making peace with France, it has been said that he seemed to show signs of confusion at this time. But after only an hour, the Earl of Warwick, on the side of York, grew impatient and launched an attack on the town's barricades. Initially, the defenders held out until they were flanked by Warwick's men. Somerset and Henry Percy were killed, and Henry, still under his banner in the marketplace, was wounded in the neck, but took no active part in the fighting. Henry hid in a tanner's house and was soon captured by York and taken to the abbey. He was not harmed by his captors, for York was fighting for, not against, the king. with Somerset dead, York, accompanied by Salisbury and Warwick, took Henry to the shrine in the abbey where Henry, with little choice in the matter, swore them as his liege men. York then ordered an end to the fighting in the name of the king. Henry was returned to London the next day, and on the 24th, paraded through the streets with York, Salisbury, and Warwick by his side. On the 25th, in St. Paul's Cathedral, York himself would hand Henry his crown. Henry would grant pardons to almost all who had fought alongside York in the July session of Parliament. By this time, York would briefly serve as Protector of the Realm again from the 19th of November. Although it has not been definitively proven, there is some suggestion that Henry was suffering from ill health at the time and was unable to attend Parliament or rule in his own right. However, York resigned the position in late February 1456, given the lack of support he received for another act of resumption that was put through Parliament, and his authority would continue to wane throughout the year. At the same time, Queen Margaret would strengthen her position, replacing some of York's men with her own in officers of stature. The court moved to Coventry with Henry in August, where he was joined by Margaret and their son in September. But by this time, he presented a somewhat feeble image. During this time, Margaret's influence would grow not only with the king, but within her appointments of men loyal to her within government and on her son's council. For now, an uneasy peace held between the Yorkists and Royalists, and Henry would march at the centre of the Love Day procession in London in March 1458, an act designed to reconcile the two sides. But when Warwick fled back to Calais after violence broke out between his men and the king's household after being summoned to a council, the situation began to deteriorate once again throughout 1459. Hostilities began anew on the 23rd of September 1459 with the Battle of Blore Heath, the first battle of the Wars of the Roses, where the Lancastrians were to intercept Salisbury's force. The Lancastrian forces were routed, but Salisbury's force was much depleted by the time he met with York and Warwick. The Yorkists made one last appeal to Henry by letter, to which he replied that he would offer York, Warwick, and their men a pardon, excluding Salisbury, but only if they surrendered within 6 days. The two armies once again faced one another in the field at Ludford Bridge on the 12th of October, and despite rumours spread by the Yorkists that Henry was dead, he and Margaret accompanied their forces. Opening shots were fired by Yorkist artillery, but battle wasn't joined, and later that night, a large number of men defected to Henry. Following this, and sensing defeat, York, Salisbury, and Warwick fled, leaving their men where they stood, unaware that their commanders had deserted them. York and his second son, Edmund, fled to Ireland, leaving his wife and two younger sons behind, while Salisbury, Warwick, and York's eldest son, Edward, went to Calais. The next morning, leaderless, the Yorkist forces surrendered, with most receiving pardons. Queen Margaret now stepped to the fore in punishing the crown's enemies, attainting York and his associates and giving some of their confiscated possessions to trusted men of the crown, including Owen Tudor and his surviving son Jasper. But all attempts to dispose of the leading Yorkists failed, and on the 26th of June 1460, Warwick and his men landed at Sandwich, reaching London by the 2nd of July. On the 10th of July, with the king and queen in attendance, the two sides faced one another outside Northampton. Already lacking in strength, part of the king's force defected to the Yorkists, causing many of the remaining soldiers to desert. Orders were issued that the king should not be harmed, and he was soon taken captive, while many of his lords were slain. Henry returned to London as a prisoner of Warwick, and Margaret fled, first to Wales before making her way to Scotland. In October, York returned to stake his claim for the crown by right of descent. There was much debate in Parliament, where Henry was not in attendance, and finally it was agreed that York would be named heir to the throne in place of Henry's son on the 31st of October 1460. York and his son Edmund were killed outside Sandal Castle near Wakefield on the 30th of December 1460 in pursuit of Queen Margaret, who still vehemently opposed them and had gathered an army to deal with the Yorkists. Salisbury's son would also die in the battle, while Salisbury himself was captured and beheaded the following day. Their heads were then put on display on the gates of the city of York. Margaret joined the army in January 1461, and they began advancing south. Warwick, taking Henry with him, went north with his force, and once again the two armies met in St. Albans on the 17th of February. The Lancastrians won the day, and Henry was recovered from the Yorkists to be reunited with his family. He was overjoyed at his release and knighted his son. Warwick had fled the field and was met on the road by York's elder son Edward, making his way to London from his own victory against Jasper Tudor at Mortimer's Cross, Herefordshire. At the same time, the Lancastrian court was also making its way to London and would arrive first. Arrangements were made with the mayor for them to enter the city, but when they approached Cripplegate on the 22nd of February, the citizens of London barred the gates against them. In contrast, Edward was welcomed into the city on the 27th of February, cutting a much more striking and royal figure than Henry. In the following days, Henry was denounced as unfit to rule. Edward IV assumed the crown on the 4th of March, 1461. The Battle of Towton would follow at the end of March, but Henry, Margaret, and Edward were not present, having already travelled north to York. They then found refuge in Scotland, where plans were made to reclaim the kingdom. Henry still had supporters, and many would join him in Scotland, where they raided over the border a number of times. Margaret travelled to France to negotiate with the new King Louis XI. An agreement was struck in 1462, and she returned to Scotland, but it was countered by the sealing of a truce between England and France in mid-1463. A truce was then concluded with Scotland in December 1463, which ended their refuge in the country. The Lancastrians were forced back into northern England, where they kept up resistance and would fight a number of battles, but were ultimately defeated. At this point, Henry seemed to be little more than a figurehead and stayed away from the battles. Following the defeat, he went on the run, seeking shelter from his sympathisers, but was eventually caught by a group of men in Lancashire on the 13th of July 1465 and was taken back to the Tower. By the time Henry was captured, Margaret had been in France for 2 years with her son, still seeking aid for their cause. Warwick made his way to France in 1470 after a failed uprising against Edward IV. Relations between the two had broken down, and now, with aid from Louis XI, Margaret and Warwick were reconciled. Warwick agreed to betroth his daughter to Henry's son, Prince Edward of Westminster, and they married in December 1470. By this time, Edward was already the opposite of his father with his martial nature. Warwick invaded England in the autumn of 1470, and Edward IV fled, having been deserted by many of his supporters. On the 3rd of October 1470, Henry was once again proclaimed king, but took no hand in ruling and was said to be extremely passive for the few short months he sat on the throne. Edward IV invaded England with a small army in March 1471, and gathered support as he marched south. With Margaret and her forces still in France, it was left to Warwick to throw back the invasion, a task at which he utterly failed, preferring instead to wait within the walls of his castle in Coventry to be reinforced. Edward IV marched on London. Henry was paraded through the streets to give heart to people at the news of the invading force, but it was said to have much the opposite effect, and Edward entered the city on the 11th of April 1471. Henry was immediately taken into custody and returned to the Tower. Margaret Prince Edward and their forces landed just 3 days later on the 14th, but their advance north was halted by Edward IV at the Battle of Tewkesbury on the 4th of May. Prince Edward was killed during the battle, and Margaret was taken prisoner. Henry, still in the Tower, was killed on the 21st of May, 1471, likely on the orders of Edward IV, though not by his own hand. History has often looked on Henry VI as mad, empty-headed, or an imbecile, a reluctant ruler who was not fit to hold the crown. But powerful influences acting on him from birth led to a dependency in life that would never leave him, and in the wake of his father's death, he had no kingly example from which to learn and form the basis of his own rule, nor experience of growing up in court in any other position than king. Some historians have even suggested that Henry was merely a puppet through which others ruled. There is no evidence that Henry was frail or simple-minded, nor that he suffered any unusual ill health in his younger years and was noted to be calm in his temperament and overtly pious. He was of a generous nature, but such was his generosity that it was of detriment to himself in a time when finances throughout the realm were stretched by war and an economic slump. This generosity also highlights the confusion he seems to have borne in matters pertaining to governance when he frequently duplicated grants. He was well-intentioned and took interest in some aspects of his rule, but seems not to have had the necessary political and diplomatic acumen that a king of the time required. Henry certainly cannot be said to have inherited his father and grandfather's militaristic tendencies, but was merciful and compassionate to a fault, issuing many pardons over the years, some of which were certainly undeserved and went against the advice of his council. His dependency on those around him, especially his wife in the later years of his reign, would intensify as he became increasingly withdrawn and possibly disillusioned with his role. This would result in much strife over many years and highlights that, despite his best intentions, his inattention and lack of interest in many matters made his rule, for the most part, ineffectual. What do you think of King Henry VI? Was he an ineffectual king who was unfit for the role, or was he a kind-natured king and a victim of circumstance? Please let us know in the comments section, and in the meantime, thank you very much for watching.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.